It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. This is Charlie Potter, your host on the Great Outdoors Show here on WGN Radio in Chicago. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. I hope you'll enjoy the show as it unfolds today. And I'm going to start off not actually talking about the great outdoors. I'm going to talk about a lovely individual who some 39 years ago, this coming September, with her husband, pulled me out of a ditch. Actually, it wasn't a ditch. Pulled me out of a muddy gravel road in northern Manitoba. And this is an individual. Her name is Faye Thorne, who this past week received a very high award in Canada called the Sovereign Medal for Volunteerism. And why am I mentioning this? Because we don't often give enough attention to people who are unsung heroes, who do wonderful things to make our society a better place. And I'm very proud to know Faye Thorne, and the Sovereign Medal for Volunteerism is an extremely important medal awarded annually in Canada, and she is one of the three individuals in Manitoba who received it this year. So 39 years ago, my first trip to northern Manitoba, actually my first trip hunting in Canada, we were in a vehicle that was not four-wheel drive. Four-wheel drive vehicles 39 years ago were, well, they were hard to come by. And we were driving down a road that was barely passable, even though it was a well-marked road in Canada. It was gravel. And we realized we had gone too far. And we turned around in a turn row, so a little field road that a farmer had made for turning his equipment in, around in. And we backed up into this, and naturally we didn't go anywhere. We just simply sunk up to the axles, all four. Across the road was a farmhouse. We walked across the road, and we knocked on the door, and that's when I met Faye Thorne, and for 39 years, first with Faye and her husband, Arnold, who passed away, we stayed with her and her family in their farmhouse in northern Manitoba for 39 straight years. Unfortunately, this year, we're not going to be able to go because, as many of you know, the border to Canada is closed. So I'll switch to what that means in a moment for those of us who love to hunt in Canada. But in the meantime, I just wanted to make mention, really, of all the Faye Thornes across North America who for years have helped make this a better place by volunteering their time to work with individuals who are less fortunate, who need care, or just need someone to help pick them up and take them someplace. There are tens of thousands of individuals that help make America and North America and Canada such a better place. I'm proud to say that I know one of them. And so, Faye, I'm very proud that you have received the Sovereign Medal for Volunteerism. And most of all, I'm really happy that you pulled me out of a muddy field road 39 years ago and have put up with me ever since, every fall, coming to northern Manitoba to be in your house while we then go out and run around the marshes of northern Manitoba. Congratulations. So, speaking of Manitoba and Saskatchewan, and Alberta, British Columbia, Ontario, all the way across. The border is now closed to Americans until the 31st of August. This has basically wiped out the fishing lodge industry in Canada. Yes, there are Canadians who fish, but there are very few Canadians who fly to these lodges the way Americans do, and who occupy drive-in lodges because they have their own boats, they have their own things, and they can go on their own. So the hundreds, literally, of premier lodges across Canada are just withering on the vine. If you want to make a fishing reservation, if you want to make a reservation at a lodge in northern Minnesota, you can't. They're all full. In fact, they're all full for next year as well. a friend of mine who lives up in Ely told me recently that the lodge owners are saying, this COVID may be bad for America and bad for the world, but it's sure great for business because they are booked for the next 2 years. There is no way you can get into a fishing lodge without a cancellation. Virtually, I'm sure there'll be some, but by and large, the lodges in America are completely sold out, while the lodges in Canada sit almost completely empty. So we are going to see a terrible situation financially unfold across Canada when COVID lifts and you can return as an American to go fishing and hunting in Canada. I think we're going to find that many of our friends who we've known for a long time, who've run great lodges, aren't going to be there. They're going to have to pack it in because they can't survive a year of absolutely no business. And that's what's happening. Let's hope that's not true. Let's hope that we find that come next year, we can go to Canada freely and lots of lodges and resorts are waiting for us. But what I'm hearing right now is that's not a good bet to take. So another thing that's going to happen this fall, right now it is till August 31st that no Americans are allowed to go to Canada. It seems as though there's no indication on the part of the Canadian government to lift it August 31st based on what's taking place with COVID-19 in the United States. So what does that mean for those of us who have gone to Canada? In my case, 39 years in a row, never missed. What does that mean for those of us who have gone to Canada and hunted birds across Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta particularly? What it means is there's going to be virtually no hunting taking place in Canada, just as though there's very little fishing taking place. So this fall could be a highly, highly unusual migration of waterfowl down the Mississippi Central and Atlantic flyways, because one of the major reasons that birds migrate, aside from cold weather, is they're harassed by hunters. Actually, that's probably not the right word. They are hunted, and so they move to places where they're not hunted. So if there's no hunting taking place in Canada, because Canadians virtually don't hunt anymore, there are very few Canadians population-wise that hunt compared to the number of Americans. And Americans, when they come, they hunt hard because they're there for a few days and they hunt every day. Canadian might go once or twice a season. So we're going to see a situation where there are there's very little hunting pressure on birds, which means the migration will be, unless we have really significant cold weather early, the migration will be delayed, and there will be a larger than ever reverse migration out of the Dakotas and Montana and Minnesota into Canada, as those birds have learned that once hunting starts in the United States, if they actually go north instead of south, there's much less hunting pressure. So for those of you who hunt the northern part of the United States, you may find this year it's going to be quite different. And for all of us who so love the smell of the North Woods and the poplar and seeing Canada's majestic prairies, it looks like we're going to be taking the year off. And for those of us who love to go fishing in Canada, we already have taken the year off. The effects of COVID-19 are felt across the outdoor industry. And while some segments are booming, as we've talked about before, if you want to buy a mountain bike, good luck finding one. If you're going to buy a jet ski, good luck finding one. If you want to book into a fishing lodge, or actually probably will come into a hunting lodge as well this fall in the northern United States, be pretty tough to find one. Canada is empty. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the great outdoors. And when I do come back, I want to talk a little bit about what is taking place in the West in Oregon with some new regulations that are really important to the future of water quality. And also, I want to talk about a hailstorm that, for the most part, missed the news, but was one of the most devastating ever recorded, and it could have a big impact on wildlife this year. You're listening to Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining me this morning. And if you're just joining me, what I'm going to talk about now is Oregon. The state of Oregon has passed regulations that are really important to the future health of stream water quality, insect life, and fish. They are going to require that individuals be notified in advance of spraying of pesticides, and they are going to require that the spraying of pesticides be done in such a way that the drift from the pesticides or the direct application of pesticides does not fall into waterways. And this is important from the point of view that we are increasingly understanding the impact of insecticides and pesticides on aquatic life and the life of small bugs that not only fish depend on, but that birds depend on. So Oregon has often been a trendsetter when it comes to the environmental movement. And as you know, I often use the word conservation movement because there's really a difference between the environmental movement and the conservation movement. Conservation being the wise use of our natural resources and environmentalism having a much more degree of lock it away, throw it away, lock it up, throw away the key, and not the management of resources. So in the case of Oregon, which is a conservation leader in America in many ways, this regulation will improve the ability of endangered salmon, hopefully, to be able to survive, but it also should really improve the quality of streams, which have been so impacted, so degraded, particularly now more recently by the spraying of pesticides. So we'll see what happens, but it is a step in the right direction, and it is a step in the right direction for the conservation movement, the wise use of our natural resources, so that we indeed can protect while being able to utilize our resources. A few weeks ago, there was a violent, historic hailstorm, which I'm sure most of you, including myself, never heard about until recently. This hailstorm was epic in proportions and swept across Alberta and Saskatchewan in a way that was absolutely devastating to wildlife and to crops. It was largely unreported because the reality is very few people live in Alberta and Saskatchewan, and most Americans don't care about what happens in Alberta and Saskatchewan. If this had been a hailstorm that had rumbled through, say, St. Louis or something, we would have seen it in spades. But it didn't. We didn't. The result was a complete wipeout of agricultural crops in the region in which this hailstorm went through. These were hailstones as big as 16-inch softballs. Anything it hit was destroyed, from cars to roofs to wildlife to dead sheep, cows. The estimate or the concern is that hailstones hit nesting waterfowl and nesting upland birds while they were sitting on their nests. And given the intensity of it and the size of it, very little chance nesting birds could possibly survive it. And also, for those that had just hatched their broods, very little chance the ducklings could have survived being hit by these hailstones. This year, we don't have any surveys taking place in Canada, so we really have no information on the nesting success of waterfowl, the breeding populations, etc. We don't have any information on the number of potholes and ponds that were available. So we are dealing with a situation where it's possible that in this band in which the hail fell, there was huge loss of wildlife. We'll never know. But the experts who have now viewed some of the video and looked at some of the mapping of where the storm hit and overlaid it with some of the transects for waterfowl nest fear that that this could have come at a very bad time, and it could have caused great damage to not only waterfowl populations, but basically all wildlife, upland birds, even big game, if they were hit by these absolutely unbelievable hailstones and the intensity of the storm. So we really will never know, but that's something that occurred that did not make the American news. Also, what I'd like to do just before we end the show today is talk a little bit about what is taking place, again, with Atlantic salmon, which shows that we try to protect species without necessarily understanding all the nuances of the ecosystem. And you've heard me talk before about the plummeting Atlantic salmon populations. One of the things, again, that's taking place this year due to COVID is Americans can't go fish the famous salmon streams of Northeast Canada, Quebec, Labrador, Newfoundland. We can't go there. So we're getting very little data from these rivers. But what we do understand is that striped bass continue to increase in populations in these rivers and in the St. Lawrence Seaway, which is to the huge detriment of Atlantic salmon. We are seeing burgeoning striped bass populations, and we are seeing plummeting salmon populations. And unless there is management action taken to reduce the size of the striped bass population, which in some cases is not even native to the rivers that they're in, we are likely to see an end to any viable Atlantic salmon population. That's a big statement, but the trend lines are there, and the current information that's coming out of Canada would indicate that this year the striped bass only continued to increase in numbers. So we'll follow that in the coming weeks. Also, next week I'm going to talk about some of the women who've made conservation, historic conservation achievements in America at a time when we are looking for leadership. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.